Hey guys, what's up? This is Jacob back here with the first official episode of the Clear Path podcast. It's presented and powered by Vendetta Sports Media. I'm joined by Alex Philbrick. And did I pronounce that right?
Yeah, you did. You did.
Good. It's pretty easy to pronounce. Just want to make sure it's not some silent F or something, silent P or something.
Yeah.
but yeah, man. So if anybody, you know, I'm sure the pilot episode hasn't been listened to by everybody that's going to listen to this, but this is a basketball podcast kind of powered through Vendetta Sports Media, which is a website that Alex and I are contributing to, you know, writing, media, things like that. So we'll kind of dive into all things, majority NBA, but college and high school, how that ties in, you know, depending on how the draft and coverage and stuff goes. But yeah, so this is our first episode. We figured around the trade deadline, it's a great time to start. A lot of content out there. But yeah, so Alex, are you doing anything else for Vendetta? Or is it kind of like, are you doing like NBA? Is there anything else you're dabbling with?
Yeah, I'm really, I really came on board to do mainly NFL and college football. But I really love the NBA a lot too. So I asked if I could help contribute any way possible. And as we can see here, They gave that the go ahead. So yeah, I really love NBA following it. So I'll be helping out with NBA a little bit too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I did post in the Slack today, like anybody want to jump on. So he was Alex was the first one available. So he gets to be the first guest. But yeah, like, I mean, NBA has turned into my, like my love, my passion as far the past couple of years. Once you're in college, I used to be a huge college football fan though. That was like all I watched, and the NFL still, of course. That's some good coverage, man. That draft coverage coming up. I know a couple other people for the site are writing on it and stuff. So it's going to be it's a good time for that sport too. NFL is not really like an off season as far as media coverage goes.
Yeah. I mean, it's a year round thing, but I mean that the NBA is becoming that for sure. More than the NFL, but yeah, I really started mainly loved football and college and NFL, but over the past 5 or 6 years, I've become even more into the NBA and followed it even closer and closer and started to love it more. So.
Yeah, the more as we mature and stuff, it's one of those you kind of get out of the college aspect more. You get to into the pro. At least for me, it was more of a pro sports once I was out of college. But anyway, so we wanted to jump in here, kind of hit off a few NBA notes from the past, I guess, 4 to 5 days, past week, a couple of the top stories. The main portion of this is going to be dedicated to a few, some trade deadline rumors towards the end, do a couple fake trades, a couple real world scenarios that are likely or, you know, on the horizon with a couple different teams. But yeah, so the first thing we kind of want to jump into, I mean, this Cavs stuff, dude, it's been like, the news cycle the past couple of days has been just dominated by LeBron. I mean, I know they picked the all-star teams tonight, which is interesting, but it's just been – I'm a big LeBron guy, but it's been kind of painted like he's just pointing fingers at people. And it's – I hate the look for him because, like I said, I'm a LeBron guy, but you can't really take it any other way than him just blaming the way the season's going on other people.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm a huge LeBron guy as well. Like I'm a Celtics fan, but LeBron's my favorite player. Obviously he's so great, but it's just been fun when we were young, like becoming teenagers, he was coming on the scene and stuff. So it's just been fun to grow up with him and like as a sports fan. I know it sounds kind of cheesy, but
no, I mean, he's our Michael Jordan. I mean, that's what he is. So
yeah, but you're right about how the picture's painted regarding LeBron. He's always placing blame on other people. And I don't like it either, being a LeBron fan, like you said, but it seems like that's what's going on. And mainly at Kevin Love, but that seems to be kind of a theme for the Cavs, is point the finger at Kevin Love, use him as a scapegoat. But yeah, I mean, they have a lot of problems that I don't think can be denied right now.
Yeah. I mean, Kevin Love, it seems like ever since he got there, an aside, I always wonder how that team would have looked versus the Warriors with Andrew Wiggins instead of Kevin Love. That was always something I was fascinated with, that I thought that team would have matched up pretty well, especially perimeter defensively with Wiggins. But Kevin Love's always kind of been like the third, the less popular star with LeBron and Kyrie, and he always kind of got the blame because he's never been a good defender. He's not going to be a good defender, but he's a really, really like elite level talented offensive player. So he's, you know, he's no different than a lot of players in the league. But when you play with LeBron and he's pointing out people's screw ups on the defensive side, like on the court and, you know, or something like that, or when Kevin Love's playing center like he is this year. And obviously that's a tough position for him to play because you're having to guard people like Boogie and Anthony Davis and stuff and Andre Drummond. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
But I mean, you know, he made the All-Star game this year. I really think that it's deeper than just Kevin Love's defensive problems is what they're through. I think it's just a, it's like when your dad realized that he wasn't as athletic as he was when he was in college and high school. It's kind of like that with a lot of the players on the roster.
Yeah. It goes way beyond Kevin Love's defense for sure. And it, so some of it goes beyond just their play on the court and it, how they're meshing as teammates and as an organization. It's, they have problems on multiple levels far, far greater than just Love's defense. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Tristan Thompson really hasn't, he's really kind of fallen off this year. I don't think it's too far gone. I mean, the guy, it's not like he, you know, was a lost his touch on offense or anything. I mean, the guy was a one dimensional. He was a rebound defensive guy, offensive rebound guy. That's how he got his points. Yeah. And if you saw today, they're inserting him back into the starting lineup instead of Jay Crowder, who's also struggled. I think that's something. Yeah, I think that's something that Mike could spark it back. You know, you have the long layover, you get a couple games in the before the break to get him back in the lineup, and then I'm thinking that's something that may could spark them back because I don't really – even when he was struggling early in the season, I didn't think that this was something that was going to be a season-long problem. I really think that you get one guy like that that's guarding, get switching on the perimeter, that's, you know, hustling after loose balls like Tristan does, he can fire up a squad. And I think that Jay Crowder coming off the bench, you know, maybe that puts a little bit less heat on him and gets him a little more comfortable in their offense. So he's not, cause I mean, he's been, since you're a Celtics guy, you know, he was great for you guys the past couple of years and he's just looked like a shell of himself shooting, especially this year. So.
Yeah. And it's, I like that you bring up Tristan Thompson. As you said, he's never been in much of an offensive guy, so his lack of offensive output shouldn't really matter. Yeah. But he's always been a, like you said, defensive rebounding guy. Even as a big man, he's never really been just a great rebounder. But this year, he's only, as of right now, he's only averaging 5.7 rebounds a game, and that's crazy. I mean, that's three rebounds below his career average. And even more specifically, he's been known as an elite offensive rebounder. He's averaged at least three offensive rebounds a game every year of his career, and now it's down to 2.1. And on the defensive end, he's dropped off. His defensive plus minus is down. So I think that's an interesting point about Tristan Thompson's fall off is something that matters a lot to them, especially if he's their main defensive option down low. With, as we discussed, Love not being very much of a defensive guy down low, so that they need Thompson to be there, and he really hasn't been there.
Right, and it's not like this team has been an elite defensive team the past 3 years anyway.
No.
I mean, the Heat were much better, a much better defensive team the years that LeBron and D-Wade were there. This team has been a deadly offensive team. They've had tons of shooting. They've had good offensive rebounding with Love and Thompson, and that's been their calling card. And the games they have – beaten the Warriors in the past few finals, they did play well defensively, and that's kind of how you have to hope it just clicks on a given day like that. But and like you said, the problems on this team are deeper. They're meshing with Isaiah Thomas, which is something that's a factor that he still hasn't gotten his legs back. He hasn't looked you know as deadly as he has in the past. So I'm interested to see how the long layout, now that he's back in the groove of like the schedule and the flights and everything like that and playing on back to backs, then give him like 10 days off with the break. You know, he's not participating in anything in the All-Star weekend for the first time in a couple of years. This could be, hopefully he comes back strong too. I mean, I think it's going to be a four-peat in the finals. I just want them to, I want it to be a formidable matchup.
Yeah. And so, I mean, they've only had Isaiah for 8 games. And so that's, obviously not very much. He's not been playing very well, but it's still only 8 games. And they have 8 new players. I mean, we talked about, obviously, Isaiah Crowder, D-Wade, Derrick Rose, Jeff Green. So, I mean, they have a lot of different players. So they're still getting used to it, and I think it's pretty obvious that they haven't gelled. But I think their how new their roster is obviously plays a big factor into that. But regarding Isaiah, I appreciate what he did as a Celtics fan last year. It was an incredible year, but I think we're seeing a little, just a small, very, very small sample size of it's tough for him. It's going to be very tough for him to fill that Kyrie Irving hole. I don't think he's going to be able to do that, but what he's done so far in the little time that he's been there is not even close to good enough to fill that Kyrie sized hole in their, on their team.
And I mean, there's some scenarios where I think they address this in the trade deadline, which we'll touch on in a little bit. But I think there's some ways that can make his load a little bit lighter to carry and allow him to use the latter half of the season to kind of just get more in a groove, his outside shooting and his taking people off the dribble, getting his legs back. So I think that can be addressed by, adding some people, which – that's probably what they're going to do. I feel like there's not a scenario in which they don't make a trade, whether big or small. Yeah, so we'll get into that later a little bit. Something else I wanted to touch on as far as like kind of news and notes was the Kawhi Leonard stuff, which if anybody doesn't know, report came out. Adrian Wojnarowski broke it. So that's significant to me too, is because it's not, you don't see pieces like that from Woj all that often. His stuff is very rooted in facts and very rooted in relationships that he has in the front office. And this is the type of this is the type of story you would see a writer post that posts this stuff all the time, like a Ramona Shelburne or, somebody like that's really like in those locker room relationships with the players. But this is a weird, especially coming from the Spurs, this is not something that you predict to see or that you ever think about. You don't even consider them as being some team with some behind the scenes drama. But I kind of wanted to see what you thought about, because in my opinion, this is just I could see it as being as small as a misunderstanding or one person dropping a leak to the media that just, kind of spurred onto this. I really don't think – I think this is something that the cooler heads will prevail in this organization. I mean, they haven't had issues in years, and they've been consistently an elite team in the league. I see this as probably, we won't even touch on it again after the season. I don't think this will be anything that I don't, there's, in my mind, there's no scenario in which Kawhi leaves or is moved. So
what makes it the most surprising is that it's the Spurs. Like you said, I mean, they, if that ever comes up, they squash that. They are known for their team chemistry, and it goes back obviously a long way. But and Pops is known as the guy who, he doesn't put up with that kind of stuff. That doesn't fly with Pop. Like, and he builds this, I don't know, he builds this team that
machine.
that never has that kind of stuff involved. So that's obviously the most surprising thing about this. And also Kawhi, he's known as the quiet superstar. He's known as the guy who just goes about his business and is. In the same type of way as Tim Duncan. People assume, he played, he was young under Tim Duncan, and he kind of learned the ways of that, of the Spurs way and the Tim Duncan, which is really the Tim Duncan way, whatever. And so for the Spurs to have this drama and then it be from Kawhi, it's really out of nowhere and surprising, but.
Yeah, it was really kind of just one of those stories where it's not groundbreaking enough to make, just kind of like, shake the NBA, but it was like almost that way because of who it was. And it's like, they're like, oh, Kawhi was unhappy and all this stuff. Like, the dude never changes facial expressions. Like, he's the most even keel, laid back guy. I mean, that story that everybody's heard where he still drives like what, that 1998 Chevy Suburban or something. It's like he doesn't, he's a mild mannered, low key guy. And I think this is something where I just think this is an injury that he hasn't. A lot of times you see, guys that injure their knee or a major, an ACL injury or, like a Gordon Hayward injury. Those are injuries that really, by this day and age, have a defined time of return, have a defined rehab period and something. And you know when you're coming back, and you have tons and tons of examples of when you're going to feel like yourself again. And with an injuries that like Kawhi has suffered, like a quad injury, similar to like a hamstring injury, and then like a shoulder problem, these are things that, it doesn't, they linger and they're hard to get. It's hard to trust certain parts of your body. And then, you know, you never, it may be a year and a half before you're fully done with the pain or fully pain free. So I think that's kind of just some frustration on his part of just unfamiliarity with this.
I was just going to say that actually, that like almost exact thing. I could, I would not be surprised at all if this is resolved soon and it, and it's really just a matter of Kawhi being frustrated with his season so far. He's only been able to play in 9 games. He's really never been a guy who has injuries. I mean, I know last year in the playoffs, but that was kind of a freak thing. But he's it's probably really frustrating for one of the best players in the league to just be dealing with some nagging injury that's barely holding him back, but is limiting him to where he can't play most of the season. So I think that's a really good point about this could just be him really frustrated that he can't get out there and play.
Yeah. I think that's kind of what it is. I'm not sure exactly if, you know, he's going to, if this is going to be like a season long thing for him. I mean, maybe they kind of just kind of close the door on it and just let it be like, all right, you're going to spend the entire season rehabbing and not really test it. Cause I mean, you know, the Spurs will make a top four seed. They'll go into the playoffs. If they don't have Kawhi, they'll still win a couple games. I'm not sure. They'd be more primed for a first round upset, in my opinion, if he wasn't playing. But other than that, I don't think this is too big of a concern for them. I mean, he's still under contract. You know, they have some other. It does suck that LaMarcus Aldridge is having a really good season, and that they might kind of waste that. But other than that, I think it's not much to worry about for the Spurs.
Yeah, especially after LaMarcus Aldridge was – I mean, everybody was saying the Spurs have to get rid of him after the playoffs last year. Now he looks pretty good. But,
I mean, he's an all-star.
they still beat the Cavs by double digits without Kawhi, Tony Parker, Manu, and Pau Gasol. So, I mean, hey, maybe they don't need him.
it's one of those things where it's you got to talk about it, but you know deep down that nothing's gonna come of it.
I agree.
Right, so – But you know, I mean, we'll see how that plays out. It's an interesting report in the least. I want to see how LaMarcus honestly plays in this All-Star game with all those athletes on his team. But it's always fun to see. I like him because he's the guy that it's like automatic from mid range. He's just always been a fun player to watch. When he was on the Blazers, I loved watching them. It's a classic type player. But he's just, you know, he's just a joy for me.
Even going back to when he was playing at Texas, I remember watching him, and I mean, he was a standout. Obviously, he didn't look like most of the other guys that were playing college at that time.
He's a huge dude.
He's
a huge guy.
He is huge. Even watching NBA games next to other huge dudes, he looks really big.
He's a monster. But I mean, that was as far as like, I guess, non-trade related rumors go, there wasn't much else going on. I mean, we'll try to have another episode here in the next couple days to kind of cover anything else that comes out. But I want to kind of get into the trades a little bit. We chatted a little bit before this about some different scenarios, but something that you know, we'll go back to the Cavs real quick. And this kind of ties into another point, another team that I want to discuss in the Kings. But the Cavs are rumored right now. They're looking at trying to acquire George Hill, which, you know, signed for 2 years, $20 million with the Kings last year. He signed with Zach Randolph, and one of those kind of head scratchers where it's like, I guess they want to have some vets around their young guys, but it's still a lot of money to be tied up. It seems like to me, it's like I understand if that was your reasoning for signing him, but if now you're going to dump him, and it seems to me like the Cavs aren't going to be – this going to be like a – the report right now is an Iman Shumpert, Channing Frye, second round pick type scenario.
Mm-hmm.
To me, like, that's a waste of time. Like, why do you even like that makes me just criticize their decision to sign him even more.
Well, yeah, like, especially with that, since they drafted De'Aaron Fox with their first pick and then they signed George. It's for the amount of money. That's really what it is. Like you said, I mean, why would you spend that? It'd be like an NFL team drafting a quarterback then signing a free agent quarterback. It just doesn't really make sense. You're going to suck anyway if you're the Kings. Why are you signing George Hill to $20 million 3 years whenever you just drafted De'Aaron Fox that high and he's way cheaper? Their whole roster construction, you could go up and down and ask why to many moves, but But yeah, it looks like the George Hill to Cleveland thing is pretty much a done deal as far as the Fry and Shumpert and second round pick deal go.
Yeah, that's I think we'll probably see a bunch of different versions of it here over the next week before the deadline. Because we still got, like, I think it's February 8th, so we still have got probably a good 8 or 9 days or actually more than that, but something else about the Kings too is that for this trade to happen, they're going to get 2-for-1 back. They're going to get two of those players back, and they have to free up a roster spot. Mm-hmm. And people have been saying that what the move out of their camp right now is to move Scalabissier or Malachi Richardson or both to free up that roster spot to take the player back from the Cavs to facilitate the trade, which are – these are two players that are like under the age of 23, 22 years old. They're super young. They're raw talent. They're guys that need to be on the court to see what you have. They're making $1 million to $2 million. They were like late first, early second round picks. To me, these are the types of players that need to be playing 28 to 35 minutes a game for you right now. And you're going to dump one of them to another team just so that you can basically, help the Cavs out by giving them George Hill. Like, to me, it's just a bad run organization. And it's another thing that it's hard for me to understand why they're doing it.
Yeah. What you just touched on, they're a poorly run organization, but I agree. Yeah. I mean, like I just said, you know you're not going to be good if you're the Kings. So why not just see what you have in a guy like Scalabissier, who's been a highly touted prospect since he was in high school. He hasn't really lived up to it yet, but he still has that raw ability. So you might as well just throw him out there. I think throwing him to the side just to facilitate a George Hill trade would be another horrible move. But I don't know that we should expect much different from him right now.
I mean, in this case, just try to, if you're another team, just try to get in on that race or get in on that situation.
Absolutely.
And try to steal one of those guys. Like, oh yeah, we'll send you a second round pick for, Scal. I mean, sure, yeah, I'd do
definitely.
That.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, he's former lottery he's pick a, who's,
right.
or former first round project, pick who's yeah. got
he's
some
projected
raw talent.
Lottery.
Yeah. Why not take a shot on him for definitely. Give up nothing? Because they're just trying to give him away, but. Yeah, I think that's a good point, though.
It's a head scratcher, man. It's a head scratcher. That's a Kings thing, that's all they ever do. But as far as the Cavs go, I think another that George Hill trade, which may be likelier than anything else that they do. People have been throwing, like we said, Kevin Love's name in a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I don't see them moving him just because of his contract, and I don't know if you're going to find another team to bite on it. And mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to get enough back for him to where it's going to be worth it. I mean, the people are throwing him in deals for like Boogie Cousins and things like that. That's just not going to happen.
No.
Those two players are happy playing with each other in New Orleans, and you're not going to take that away. I think they're going to be able to re-sign him, so I don't think they're going to break that crew up. And there's really not a lot of other teams out there. I heard some Miami Heat rumors, but they don't really have the type of perimeter talent that you want to get back for him.
Yes.
They're kind of just a team of misfits, a team of like B players that are playing well together because their coach is good. But I think they end up holding on to Love. And if they get Hill, I think that, like I said earlier, I think that really helps out the Isaiah Thomas scenario. And you can play those guys side by side even, which is probably what they'll do. And if you get Tristan Thompson back in the flow of things, and you have George Hill, who's an elite shooter and a plus defender on the perimeter, I think it can kind of make things a little bit easier for a lot of other guys, and you can start fitting in your roles a little better. And that's when you see a team like that, the last 20 games of the season, they'll just be clicking on all cylinders.
Yeah. So. Excuse me. I don't think they're going to trade Love either, but I do think George Hill, while it's not a huge splash of a move for the Cavs, he can help them because J.R. Smith is pretty. He might be unplayable at this point.
Yeah,
and so
or just change up his role. Like see what he can do in another role with him, and maybe that's what he needs.
Yeah, I mean they have to do something. He's been really horrible, and he wasn't very good last year in the playoffs either. I don't think they'll end up moving Love. But one scenario that I thought could be interesting, and this would be a huge, this would be a blockbuster move. But what do you think about Kevin Love for CJ McCollum, just straight up, do you think one team would say no way to that? Do you think that wouldn't be a good fit for either one?
That's an interesting one. I feel like I've heard that like thrown around maybe in like years past too, or like in week in months past. That's something that I think the Cavs would be interested, because you're not really downgrading on defense and you're definitely upgrading on perimeter offense. But it is another player that needs the ball in their hands. I think both teams would give this thought and they'd think about it for a day. But I think in the end, both of them would probably say no, because if you're the Blazers, and we might get into this more later, I think you might be able to get more for McCollum. Depending on what you want, how you want to build your team, I think you may be able to get a little bit more for him.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's on the surface level, it's something that looks like it would work out for everybody involved, just because Kevin Love, he went to high school in the Northwest area. He's always been from the West Coast, so it's just kind of assumed that maybe he would like to get back to that area. And then the Cavs kind of and the Blazers reportedly, we'll talk about this in a little bit, want to maybe split up the McCollum Lillard thing, so that would take care of that. You get a all-star Kevin Love in return, and then if you're the Cavs, you might get to break up some of the drama that's happening that involves Kevin Love and get a quality player back. But I don't really think it's going to happen or even be rumored. But it was just one interesting that I came up with when I was playing with the trade machine.
Yeah, I mean, you're still getting an all-star if you're Portland, and I know McCollum didn't make it, but that's because the perimeter, the guard, it's always hard to make it as a guard, and easier as a big
in the West, especially.
They're both all-star players. I think that you're destined to split up Damian, and then we'll kind of transition into that. You know, the report was that Damian Lillard went and met with Paul Allen, who's the owner of the Blazers, and very involved owner. Him and Steve Ballmer. Worked at Microsoft together, and Ballmer, the owner of the Clippers, so they're both very involved, very passionate, win first owners. You've seen the Blazers make moves in the past few years where they've paid guys that you were like, why are they doing this? But their function, their whole goal is to always continue to win, and that's why they sign guys like Evan Turner to monstrous deals. They feel like it's going to help them win now instead of taking a more relaxed approach of maybe trying to gain another asset or get another draft asset or something like that. But I think that's interesting because, a guy like Allen, it's like Blake Griffin going and talking to Ballmer. Like, they're going to listen to their franchise player. Yeah. And if Lillard goes in there with some sort of crazy idea about maybe unloading CJ or something like that, I mean, you don't know what. I mean, this is the type of team I could see making a deal in the ninth, in the 11th hour that's out of nowhere, or that just kind of, you don't hear much about it until it happens.
Yeah, that's a good point. And since you brought up the Allen and Ballmer connection, one potential deal that I came up with when I was just messing around involves McCollum again, and another guy that's been highly rumored in the trade talks, DeAndre Jordan. So what would you think about DeAndre and Pat Beverly for McCollum, just straight up, just McCollum? It might not be enough for the Clippers. And I know the Blazers have Nurkic, so maybe that wouldn't really work out with him and DeAndre. If they also got Pat Beverly, it would help their backcourt situation with defensively, because Lillard, he's not very good at defense. He needs another guy next to him that's a little bit better than McCollum on D. But I would like to know the root of the problem that Lillard seems like he clearly has, if he's going to the owner to talk about things. But it seems like the Blazers would be more likely to give up McCollum than Lillard at this point, even though they have the same amount of time left in their contract.
I think McCollum's would be the one. I think Lillard's the more polarizing figure that you want to hold on to. It's going to get people to come play with him. But the Clippers trade with DeAndre, I think that is actually an interesting one, because I think that is something that the Blazers would do. I mean, you mentioned how, well, you don't know if it necessarily makes sense with Nurkic. That's the type of thing I see the decision that I see the Blazers making. One that doesn't – I mean, last year when they're drafting more big men, when they didn't need them, they drafted Zach Collins and Caleb Swanigan. It's like, dude, you needed wing players.
Yes.
But, you know, so I could see, you know, a scenario where they think like Pat Connaughton could slide into their starting lineup beside Lillard, you know, a more of a dedicated shooter that doesn't need the ball in his hands, and then rework that starting lineup with Nurkic. Maybe you even play Nurkic at the same time. Maybe you go that approach of having a dedicated offensive big. And then, I mean, we've seen teams do, like, I mean, like the Pelicans do it, you know, mm-hmm. like they've got two guys that you feel like would be centers in today's NBA, but the way they play them, it works out. And I think that's an interesting one. I could see that being more realistic than a Kevin Love trade.
Yeah, I think so too. And it gives – it seems as if DeAndre's style of play would fit a little bit with Lillard's a little bit more maybe than maybe Kevin Love would. Just working like a screen and roll and then doing the alley-oop, because that's really all DeAndre is going to be able to make. But I don't know that it's even a possibility or even talked about, but – it's one that could be interesting, an interesting thing if it did.
I mean, I'd rather see that one instead of the Love trade. I'd rather see, I mean, in McCollum in LA would be interesting too, because I think with their roster, that would be something that, you know, adding that perimeter scoring. I mean, Lou Will's a rental. He's not going to be there.
Yeah, he's only 1 year. Yeah.
I doubt he re-signs there. But that's a player with McCollum that you have Blake Griffin and McCollum at the top.
Yeah,
you basically trade salaries with Jordan. And I mean, you still have that albatross of Gallinari, but you're in a little bit better position, I feel like, because you can find somebody to plug in at that center position a lot easier than you can find somebody to play that two guard spot.
Yeah. And so, with McCollum being on a 4-year deal and Blake just having signed that 5-year deal in the offseason, if you're top two players are McCollum and Blake Griffin moving forward. That's not bad. I would rather have that than Blake Griffin and DeAndre for sure.
Yeah, no, I think so too. I don't think you need to have your two cornerstones be low post players, because I think you're limiting yourself. And then, and then your third highest salary is the Gallinari deal, who he's a modern stretch four in an ideal scenario. So
yeah,
I think you have a lot of money tied into guys that aren't having the ball in their hand. So you know, I think McCollum would fit well with Teodosic too, and I think it would be an all around. And the young guys that the Clippers have had, which that's been an underlying theme, is the little two way contract guys that the Clippers have signed have helped them. They've been starting consistently, which is crazy. But those that is showing a little bit more about their talent evaluation, because they've had terrible benches in the past. So
yeah, that's where Doc Rivers, the GM, has been handicapping Doc Rivers, the coach. But I think that's a whole different story.
That's
for a whole different podcast, I think.
You could have a whole podcast on just that. I mean, I'm a huge proponent of, if you're a coach in NFL, I relate this in the NFL to being a head coach that wants to call plays. Mm-hmm. I think that's also, I mean, a very small scenario, small number of people can actually do that. And people like Doc Rivers just, you know, they don't have a modern, they can't put the GM hat on. They can't distinguish between the two very often.
Yeah.
One more kind of final trade piece that I wanted to hit on is something's a little bit more closer to home than anything else. It's I am from the Memphis area and a big Memphis Grizzlies fan, but Tyreke Evans, who we signed on a 1-year deal last year. He's making about a little hair over $3 million, a very valuable deal. One of those that you wish you would have signed him for two. But it's something that he's destined to be traded because of the way our season has gone and the way we've kind of fallen to the latter half of the upper half of the lottery. And a couple of interesting scenarios, and I don't know if you had put any together or not, but a team that I had been thinking about was the Denver Nuggets. Mm-hmm. And I had seen this on Twitter a little bit. This is something that I kind of organically came to a conclusion on, or kind of organically, you know, came across in my own notes and then saw some local media going through it today. But it was involving the Nuggets and who desperately need a ball handler that can score to go with their talented bigs and their other wing players. But a player like Malik, you know, a combination of like Malik Beasley and Emmanuel Mudiay, who the Nuggets just, it's not worked out. I think they just want to rid themselves of. And I think it's a player that if you're a team like Memphis, he's making $3 million. He's a year away. He's got this year and another year left on his contract till he's till he's an unrestricted free agent, I believe. And then Malik Beasley, who's got three more years left, who is kind of like that. He's like a late first round pick, kind of a high volume shooter who's played well in like the summer league. But I think for a team like Memphis that's starved for like perimeter talent, is a chance you take. What do you think about that kind of combo, Tyreek for Beasley and Moutier?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be something that the Grizzlies would be interested in, just because, mm-hmm. as you said, they're really not going anywhere right now. So you really know what you have in Tyreek, and as you said, he's only on the one year deal. So he's more than likely he's just a rental. Mm-hmm. So if you're not going anywhere this year, I don't really see why you wouldn't be interested in bringing in as much young potential as possible, and more specifically on the perimeter, and that's what those two guys could possibly be, especially a guy like Moutier. He's I know you said Beasley and I'm going blank right now. I can't remember.
Moutier and Beasley. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. You did say Moutier. But he was a guy who was highly thought of, and he hasn't really panned out so far. But in the same sense as Scal, as we talked about earlier in the show, he's a guy who was a big time prospect who hasn't really panned out. But that doesn't mean that he's done. He can still turn his career around. I mean, he's only in his third year, so he's still got a lot of time left to possibly, you know, develop into that player that people hoped for. And if you're the Grizzlies and you make that move and he does end up developing into something that he could have been, you look like a genius, because all you gave up was Tyreek Evans, who he's having a good year, but he's gone, at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great story. You know, he went to college in Memphis, mm-hmm. But he's going to be gone after the season. Like, that's going to be a guy who's going to go play for a better contender or a better team, or you're going to get his payday on a 3 or 4 year deal. So
yeah, get his payday more than likely.
Yeah. But yeah, that was kind of a thing that I thought was good for the Grizzlies, who can't seem to evaluate perimeter talent in the draft in the years mm-hmm. past. And this is kind of one of those things where you take a chance on some players that a team undervalues, and you kind of run with it. And then from Denver's perspective, you know, you get a guy that can help you win now and help you advance in the playoffs to fire up that fan base. And then also you have some wiggle room with roster wise to make some other moves in the offseason and really add to that core, you know, because you're gonna have to pay Jokic here soon too. So
yeah, definitely. He could be argued as the best deal in the NBA right now, because I mean, he's making what, $1 million a year, $1.5 million dollars a year. That's pretty amazing. But
they're about to have to pay him so much money. There's gonna be so many teams after him.
Yeah, he's a max guy.
Yeah, he's definitely a max guy. And then the only other scenario I saw with Tyreek, maybe, or I mean, there's a lot of other scenarios where the way with Denver was, I was okay. I'm a guy that wants to get picks in return, but if you got two young players from Denver without having to, you know, without getting a pick, I was okay with that. But with the Washington Wizards was another team that I had him pegged to kind of come off the bench, probably behind John Wall and Beal, to really help what their biggest problem was last year in the playoffs was depth. And some player if it was a trade with the Wizards, it would have to be for a first round pick, because they don't really have any players like Moutier or Beasley that are going to be throw-ins. It's probably going to have to be just salary matches, you know, some like lower guys like Tim Frazier. Mm-hmm. Or I think there was one other guy, maybe Jody Meeks or something like that, was a guy that I had kind of considered there for them. But that's kind of the only other team. I mean, I think he would really help the Wizards. That would be a really interesting trade to put Tyreek on that team.
Yeah, the only thing that I think could be a problem with him going to the Wizards, and I like the Wizards are one of the most fun teams to play with on the trade machine, because they're good and they have some pieces to trade. But if you do you think that would create too much of a logjam at that 2-3 position with having Tyreek, then having Oubre, Porter, and Bradley Beal?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, they've been playing Oubre more as a 3 and a 4. So I don't think it would clog them up too much. And I think it would I think what it would do would be allow them to kind of flip their lineups a little bit more and run some second unit stuff with Tyreek with the ball in his hands, and yeah, maybe even in crunch time, you have Tyreek out there next to John Wall, so that there's not, you have two elite ball handlers, which I would consider Evans, you know, not as much as John Wall, but close to John Wall as far as ball handling skill. And maybe he's running a more efficient second unit with Mahimi and Jason Smith and players like that and Mike Scott. You know, it's a team that their starting lineup is where they make their money and where they win their games. But, you know, you got to find ways to improve, because I don't think the team, the way it's built, is more than a second round playoff team. I think they're, once they play a team in the top four, it's going to get tough.
Yeah, so. I agree. I think they're probably maxed out in what they did last year and going seven games with the Celtics.
Right.
But I think they're a team that to look at when it comes trade deadline, whether it's a more of a minor deal like you're talking about or a big deal like maybe a Boogie type deal if he's on the trading block, which it sounds like less and less likely, but that's something that I think would be really interesting is the Wizards getting involved with Boogie if that's a possibility.
I'd love him and Wall to play together. That would be a dream scenario. Just get those Kentucky guys back.
Yeah,
I really think they would enjoy that. Yeah. It'd be hard though. That's more of a, I mean, honestly, you'd probably have to trade for him because they don't have the cap space to just sign him outright the offseason. Yeah. So they would probably have to do a sign and trade or something. But you're really, it would really depend on if Boogie was just like, New Orleans, I don't want to stay with you.
That's what it would take.
Yeah. It's going to be, it'd be an interesting one though. I'd love to see that makeup. But you got the Wizards, they got a lot of money tied up in those guys, but they are in their perimeter players, which I like. You know, and Porter and everything, who has looked better this year.
And really where they've handicapped themselves is giving that much money to Mahinmi. That was a bad move. That's a disaster move.
Oh my gosh. That was that offseason where we gave so much money to Chandler Parsons, and it's just one of the many deals that looks awful now.
including the future pick that's going to Boston. That's going to be rough when it comes time for that.
It's going to be terrible. I'm hoping that we hold on to it next year and we're bad enough to keep it, because I think it's like top eight protected or something.
Yeah, but I think so.
But oh well. I mean, that's one of those. Just please get this front office out. Please switch these guys out. So that's kind of what I wanted to touch on today, guys. You know, Tyreek's a piece that I see being moved. And also I see the Cavs making some move over in the next week or two. But hopefully we'll come back and grab Alex and we'll jump in a few more trade scenarios and maybe have some info to follow up on the stuff we went over today. Unless there's anything else from you, I think we're good to go here.
No, man, I'm good. It was fun being on. I enjoyed it. I'm glad that I got to be the first Vendetta member that was on the podcast. But yeah, looking forward to being on again. Hopefully, if this didn't go too bad from my end.
No, I mean the mic didn't cut out yet, so I think we're good. Okay, you know, your equipment's working fine. So, but yeah, guys, like I said, this is the Clear Path Basketball Podcast. We're powered by Vendetta Sports Media. The site's set to be launching on February 1st. In the perfect world, so we'll see if there's any difficulties there. But we'll get this posted on iTunes. There's an iTunes page and a SoundCloud page. You can also follow us on social media and everything. You know, I'm at Jacob McCormick _ and Alex, what's your Twitter?
At Alex _Philbrick.
Cool. We'll post that in the bio and tweet it out when we tweet it out. But guys, we'll talk to you next time.
Peace. All right. Thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, peace.